So, our next presentation will be precision placement of dairy slurry to supply N and P for silage corn. And I don't think you're Shabbat.
I am Shabtai Bittman.
Shabtai Bittman. And with that, we will.
Thanks very much for all you diehard people here. I'd like to recognize my co-authors, Derek Hunt, who's here, and Hongzhi Zhang and Kobe Hugendorn. So there's a serious nutrient surplus in the Lower Fraser Valley of British Columbia, and an urgent need to reduce nutrient inputs on dairy farms in particular and other types of farms. So methods are needed to find ways to use slurry manure to replace fertilizer inputs while maintaining production levels so that less fertilizer needs to be purchased and brought onto farms and into the region. So we have the question as whether you can whether precision injection of dairy slurry can be used to replace current mineral fertilizers for corn. And then secondly, we want to know if there are environmental concerns about large amounts of slurry being placed into injection furrows. So the region itself is it's the Lower Fraser Valley of British Columbia here, and it's contiguous with Whatcom County in Washington State, one of the larger dairy counties in the U.S. And this region, this is a manure map of Canada, not sanctioned by our tourist bureau, by the way. So we have that little small area in the corner there. Canada's a very big country. It produces all the milk pretty much for the province and most of the poultry as well. And it's also a very highly populated area. So nutrient loading in the area is a serious concern. So if there was actually a color that was redder than red, then that would be that color. So that gives you an idea why we have an issue and why we're trying to find all kinds of ways to make better use of manure and to reduce inputs of mineral fertilizer. So specifically, our objectives were to evaluate the efficacy of precision injected dairy slurry to replace mineral nitrogen and phosphorus fertilizer for corn, and then also to assess the losses that are brought about by injection of large amounts of manure, in particular nitrate and by leaching and N2O emissions. And then finally to determine whether we could use a nitrification inhibitor to mitigate N2O emissions. So this is the concept. There's really, in a sense, two aspects to it. We're injecting manure at corn row spacing. That's very critical. And in order to accommodate the amount of manure that we need in order to supply the phosphorus requirement of the corn, then we have to inject to about 6 inches or 15 centimeters. And the spacing, our corn spacing is 75 centimeters, 30 inches. So we do that, and then the next critical part is that we plant a few days later, after the manure has had a chance to soak in, we plant as close as we can to the corn rows. This is what we have done where others have not done. And the concept here is that by placing the manure close to the corn, in this case actually the corn close to the manure, the manure has to go in first, it's critical to supply the phosphorus, the starter phosphorus, and therefore we don't need to apply the starter phosphorus. And the second point, of course, is that the manure is injected so that you get less loss of nitrogen by ammonia volatilization. So this is what it looks like when the corn comes up. The yellow lines indicate the precise place of the center of the manure furrow. And this is what it looks like a little bit later. And this is what it looks like when the corn is grown. And so this represents sort of a summary of the treatments. There are actually more treatments than these, but these are the main ones. So we have a zero control, of course, and we have commercial fertilizer, which is broadcast, and it's ammonium nitrate, not urea, in order to minimize volatilization losses. And alongside, there's the mineral starter, and this is what the farmer would do. So there's 30 kilograms of P, of actual P, and 20 of N, which is what the farmers would be applying. And then another treatment is slurry, which is broadcast, and broadcast and incorporated, actually. So after immediately after broadcasting, or let's say a couple of hours after broadcasting, it's incorporated into the soil. And that's applied either with or without starter fertilizer. And then there's slurry injected, which is that precision injection system. And we did that both with and without mineral starter fertilizer. So these are all done at various rates that you'll see in a moment. So this is the overall result. This was done for 5 years, 2010 to 2014. This is the average for the 5 years. That's important in particular because the same treatments were applied to the same plot so that there was an opportunity to recover phosphorus and nitrogen from the legacy phosphorus and nitrogen from the earlier applications. So you can get the full benefit that's possible from repeated applications. So what we see is that overall, this is across all the rates, and you'll see the rate effects in a minute, but overall the rates, you see that particularly yield and nitrogen uptake is higher for the mineral fertilizer, as expected, mainly due to the organic nitrogen component and also possibly some denitrification. So lowest uptake and lowest yield is from the slurry broadcasting, and the injected is better than the broadcasting, but not as good as the mineral fertilizer. And the slurry injected plus starter definitely improves the performance. So this is what the yield response looks like. So the green, there it is. The green triangles, that's the fertilizer response curve. And you can see a typical fertilizer response curve to applications of nitrogen. To nitrogen rates, and then you can see that much lower response rate from the slurry broadcast incorporated slurry, and the slurry injected is performing quite a bit better. And it's significant that you can achieve the same yields as with mineral fertilizer with slurry application, but the rates have to be higher. So it's about 250 kilograms compared to about 160 or 170 for the fertilizer to reach peak production levels. So we can achieve the maximum production, and we can achieve it sooner if we use starter fertilizer as well as the injection. So that's another way of doing it. The problem that you have with the high rate of slurry application is that you also introduce quite a lot of phosphorus. So this is a nitrogen apparent nitrogen recovery, and you can see again, as expected, that fertilizer has a higher rate of percentage nitrogen recovery. But the injected slurry is significantly better than the broadcast. And this is phosphorus, and this is phosphorus at the six-leaf stage. We always look at that because that's a critical stage for phosphorus deficiency in corn, and that's when we see it. And here you can see the very effective use of slurry phosphorus. It's the most efficient. It's more efficient even than the fertilizer in this particular trial, and this is over 5 years. And so this is... It shows the efficacy of this precision placement for phosphorus uptake. So unintended consequences, this is nitrous oxide emissions. And indeed, slurry injected, as you can see here, is the nitrous oxide emissions. This is 2 years' results. We actually have two more years. They just haven't made it into this graph. And... there was about a doubling of the nitrous oxide emissions from injection, and other people have reported similar findings with injected manure. The bars on the right, it's the high rate, and the reason I show that here and the reason we looked at that is because that's the rate you'd need to apply in order to get the maximum corn production. So you also increase the amount of emissions, although the emission factor is not increased. So... this is the this graph shows a separate trial where we looked at suppression of nitrous oxide and mitigation with DCD, nitrification inhibitor, and in fact it worked extremely well. There was practically no emissions when DCD was applied, and partly that can be explained in part because of the very short peak, the very narrow peak. Just lasting 2 weeks of emissions with this method of application. So that's well within the efficacy time of the DCD. Unfortunately, well, we also looked at yield, and unfortunately, this using DCD did not improve yield, which is what the farmer would be interested in, and that would be the farmer's incentive for using DCD would be to improve yield. So we did suppress N2O, we didn't increase yield. So then one also has to wonder what happens to that nitrogen that was conserved, and especially if it also suppressed denitrification in general. So finally, this is data from suctional isometers placed at 45 centimeter depth, and you can see the different, or the on the left, the broadcast incorporated versus injected. And in fact, we didn't see very much difference between the two. So the method of application didn't actually seem to have very much effect. The different colors of dots is because we measured both directly underneath the injection furrow or underneath the corn row, where there was no furrow, versus right in the middle. And so you wouldn't expect really a difference in the broadcast incorporated, not much. But you would expect perhaps in the injected, but it's not that much difference. So in conclusion, maximum yield can be achieved with injected manure, but you need to go to 250 kilogram rate versus 170, and you will be applying more phosphorus than is required. So perhaps some manure separation might be needed. Phosphorus uptake from the injected slurry was very efficient. Injection of slurry increased N2O, but not leaching, and DCD can reduce N2O emissions, but did not increase yield. So finally, the overall conclusion is that you can use injected manure to fully replace mineral nitrogen fertilizer, but there's still more work that needs to be done to improve the efficacy of the system. And that's it.
So your application rate was equal for fertilizer and manure. Was that the total N content of manure, or did you multiply by some availability factor?
No, that's a total N, exactly. Yeah.
And is that a recommendation that's used in your region, or do they credit 100% of its area manure in the first year?
Yeah, well, we don't have specific recommendations. The farmers don't get that from our... So it's really up to the industry to determine. But for the purpose of the experiment, of course, we want a direct comparison. So we also have the ammonium N content. I didn't present that, which is about 50%, by the way. It's always pretty close to 50%, maybe 55% ammonium N. So you can look at it that way.
So just to follow up on that, so if you take the 250 that you said it would take and divide by the 170 or whatever, that's about 70%, which is pretty much what's reported throughout the Midwest for availability of dairy manure, 60 to 70% of the N being available in the first year.
Right, but this isn't just the first year. It's a combination because it's an average of 5 years of experiment. So the first year, it is just the first year, but by the fifth year, it includes the previous years as well. So you get that as well, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I take your point. It takes energy for sure, and so we didn't do a full footprint. We take a simpler approach on this, and that is that we need to avoid using mineral fertilizer, and we should be able to because we have a surplus of nutrients. So that is the assumption, and we can't rest until we accomplish that, really. We are in a terrible nutrient surplus situation there, and this has to be addressed. This is just one approach. And we have other experiments to look at things in other ways, but this is one of the techniques. So at the very least, the farmer should not be using fertilizer. Yeah, so that's a good point. We actually looked at, not in this study, but in a previous study, we looked at the effect on root growth and also mycorrhizae, by the way. And we didn't actually find a difference. What we did was we compared root growth on the one side versus the other side, because it's always kind of, the manure is always on one side. So we compared the root growth and also the mycorrhizae colonization. And we actually did not find any difference. It surprised us a little bit, actually. So I think what's happening is that initially there's some suppression because of ammonia toxicity and maybe salinity, but that quickly goes away because we're in a high rainfall area. And then there's a benefit to having the nutrients there, and then the nutrients start to move around too, because especially the nitrogen, because once it nitrifies, the ammonia nitrifies, and then nitrate can spread around. So I think that's what's going on. But it's a good question. Yeah. Thank you. Well, well, there is actually, because especially estrogen is there's a lot of estrogen in cattle manure. There may be some antibiotics used because the manure will wind up in the pit, even though the milk doesn't wind up in the same. It doesn't wind up in the food stream, but the manure will. So yeah, there could be some issues. It's not really a factor here because that corn is just used to feed more. To feed the cows, so it's not used for humans. But doesn't mean that some of that manure won't wind up going to food. So I mean, that's another area of investigation. I think you're working on that. So you can answer. I don't have a clue.
there's cattle manure when you use that for irrigation or for fertilizer. There's a lot of sorption that happens of the pharmaceutical compounds onto the manure. It's much harder to get out if you just use water that has the pharmaceuticals in it, there's much more likelihood it will make into the food crops. Thank you. No more questions? We'll move on.